Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are talking about cannabis and sustainability, and we are joined by co-founder and CEO of Semtrix, Saul Singer. Saul, thank you for being here with us today.
Eric, thank you so much for having me on this wonderful podcast. It's really much appreciated.
Well, it's an honor to have you, Saul. And tell us, you are based in Israel. How have you seen Israel respond to COVID? What has changed for you in your day-to-day life over the last month?
Yeah, loaded question. It was actually Israel's Independence Day today, which we celebrate. Generally, we go out to nature and celebrate that with, you know, families and social gatherings out in reserve, national reserves and whatnot. Today was complete shutdown. So very, very, very different what's going on here. I suppose, listen, in terms of the impact, you know, every life is a huge impact. I think we're around about 15,700 cases. Roughly 200 reported mortalities. So in terms of statistics, faring up relatively well, but it really has, I think, more on a philosophical, metaphysical, whatever you want to term it, Eric, it's really, I think, changed people's mindsets, this lockdown over here. Getting back to basics, searching for authenticity, what's important in life. And I think there's been a lot of that going on.
Well, Saul, that's a good perspective, and that is something that I think a lot of us have been lucky enough to sort of be a little bit introspective on and just understand how things are going. But Israel was also very aggressive early on as it relates to shutting down basically travel. And, you know, I recall my daughter was in the Netherlands. And I was going to go get her from the Netherlands. She was on an exchange program. And I had somebody, a common friend of ours, who was traveling back from Tel Aviv through Frankfurt, I believe, and said, "Bob, don't go. If she can get back alone, do it." And, you know, that was in reflection of the policies and the aggressive nature. But, heck, I know it's changed your life a lot, as it has mine, because in the last 6 to 9 months alone, we've seen each other in various Latin American locations, in Israel, various European locations, et cetera. So this is interesting. Yeah. But let's talk about the mercantile exchange. Let's talk about the ultimate commoditization of this plant and your perspective of it. What opportunity did you see, and what led you to put this project together?
Yeah, we're coming from the IT space. We've been building digital trading platforms for physical commodities for over a decade now, focusing in on niche commodities. Particularly what we call quasi-commodities. So in other words, underlying assets that are relatively standardized but not really traded through any formal exchanges. So we were relatively prolific in the global diamond industry over the last decade, building digital trading platforms there. And it was actually through one of our diamond mining clients in Lesotho, Bob, a place that we know well together, that sort of picked up the phone to me and about two and a half years ago and said, "Hey, Saul, you're in the Israel office." And I said, "Yes. Why asking?" He said, "What do you know about cannabis?" And I said, "Why are you asking me about cannabis?" Well, he said, "Listen, there's been some regulation around cannabis. Even around our diamond mine, we see a movement from traditional agricultural crops to this thing called cannabis. What do you know? You're in Israel. That's the center of R&D for cannabis," we found out. So that's where it all started. And once we started to delve in and starting to do a bit of due diligence, and number one, we were blown away at the upside potential here as regulation was sweeping through the world at the time. legalization and regulation. And we sort of saw the opportunity of creating trading platforms that addresses some of the notions that we learned over the previous decade in emerging quasi-commodities, the notions of standardization, harmonization, demand-driven economics of the pipeline. So we started to delve deep into this and came up with a proof of concept called Cintrex Cannabis Mercantile Trading Exchange, which essentially is an IT-driven platform creating an ecosystem of approved counterparties to move the product at the wholesale level. It's been a wonderful, wonderful journey. But to be frank, Bob, I think we have to put things in perspective here. It's going to take time, this commoditization, and the industry really has to take a step up in terms of professionalism in the creation of metrics, standards, harmonization. And that's definitely the narrative that we want to be part of.
Is that the hallmark in your mind of something being a commodity or being identified as such, the standardization and the reliability of the production of that material? Or how would you describe that to our listeners? Because you hear everybody, cannabis is going to be commoditized. Hemp is going to be a commodity. I think, a lot of us have a good understanding of what that means, but I don't think your average person does. So maybe you can help us just walk through, how do you identify what that word means and when we're there?
Sure. I think in terms of our industry, commoditization means the ability to implement measurable metrics that are standardized across geographic markets. So in other words, when we're speaking about flower in market A, it's the same thing as speaking about flower in market B, or the same thing on the extract level as well. So really the specifications of the product have to start to be harmonized and standardized before we can even start bantering around this term of commoditization.
Well, Saul, you talk about, you raise so many good points, but you talk about the potential of hemp and, thinking about sustainability. There are so many thousands of uses of what hemp can be used for, but you talk about metrics as well. And I see this coming up a lot where people talk about how sustainable hemp is, but there isn't a ton of research to point to. Not to say that it's an unsupported claim. I do absolutely believe in the sustainability potential of hemp. But where do you look to for the highest quality research about the sustainable qualities of this plant?
Yeah, I think if we take a step back, I think we within the industry, this industry has been just expanding at breakneck pace, essentially, and we sort of have our head in the ground, so to speak. And the major, coming at least from a trading perspective, the major driver here has been regulation. But once we lift our head out of the sand, we have to start thinking about what's this industry going to look like beyond regulation. Let's have the working assumption. I think we're all in agreement. Love to hear what you guys have to say about it. But we're all in the agreement whether it's going to take, immediate term, medium term, or longer term. But this notion of regulation, global legalization and regulation, the working assumption is that the pace of that is going to continue. But what's this industry going to look like beyond that? And I think this notion of sustainable development and impact speaks to the heart of the underlying value addition of hemp as a product, or hemp as a crop, so to speak, from a trading perspective. You're right. We've been dancing around this notion of sustainable development, but I think when you really start delving, even if you look at the UN, let's take a top-down approach, and I think that's a really good thing for us to do in our industry. When you look at the UN Sustainable Development Goals, there are 17 of them, of which, I was discussing with our team last week, how many of those 17 Sustainable Development Goals of the UN does hemp relate to directly? Now, there were differences of opinion, but it's definitely more than half of that, where hemp directly speaks to at least half of those 17 sustainable development goals. Now, what we have to do within our industry, number one, is to continue to create the narrative around that. But number two, and I think more importantly, we have to start taking real steps in terms of uptaking globally recognized and accepted impact metrics and standards that deal with this, whether it's from the Global Impact Investing Network or other entities like that. And I think, you know, it's really at its infancy here in our industry, but those, you know, these are the places that we really have to start looking.
Absolutely. And when you think about metrics, I'm thinking kind of in terms of carbon credits. How would you identify, how would you calculate what are the available carbon credits from hemp? Because without those metrics, it's simply, as Bob and I have talked about a lot, it's hard to put a value on it. I guess, another question to you, Saul, would be, you know, what organizations would you look to develop some of those hemp metrics? And do you know of, maybe some people who are at the cutting edge of trying to do that sustainable research on hemp? You know, I sit back here in the United States and think this is probably the, first or second year where land-grant universities in our country are getting funding from the federal government to do real research and provide real data on this plant, which we really have not seen up until this time. So I'm certainly excited about that. I'm wondering if you can speak to it maybe at a international, global level, maybe some studies you're aware of in Israel or the like.
Yeah, listen, I think let's go back to COVID. I think there's going to be a reevaluation of these core ethics and beliefs. And I think where we're going to see this happening, I think in the United States, definitely it's leading. You know, the Ministry of Ags is doing wonderful jobs in certain areas. To my view on things, it's actually going to come from corporate government relationships around the world. We see some interesting ones emerging in Eastern Europe, doing wonderful research going forward. There's a lot going on in that. But again, it's really at its infancy. And I think, to be honest, where it's going to come from is from within the industry. There has to be a push from industry to develop these things, to develop the partnerships. And that's what we're on about. In fact, within about 5 to 6 weeks, we'll be launching our CMTREX global digital platform, which is essentially a member-only digital community creating a curated and intelligent discussion around these topics, because to be frank, it doesn't really exist yet. So we're bringing together stakeholders from within our industry and also within academia, impact investing and sustainable development communities together to actually start this narrative and start putting the pieces of the puzzle together. It's going to come from within the industry. There will be funding, and in fact, the extent to funding for these things is actually astronomical. And I think I'd like to hear what you guys have to say as well, but this notion of impact investing and roots to attain investment for our industry through impact investing channels, it's an untapped market at the moment, and I think we're going to see a move down that path very, very quickly.
You raise a bunch of good points about just, you know, looking outside of the existing industry, coming from within the industry in terms of the motivation, but there has been a lot of resistance as if somehow this industry is ours and the people on the outside don't get to participate in it. But you and I know that that's folly. At the end of the day, you have to participate with large-scale folks. For us to see the maximum benefit of this plant around the world, we need innovation officers. We need Fortune 500 companies to recognize the benefit of using fiber, so forth and so on. That meets the sustainability goals of the United Nations, of the World Economic Forum that we've identified and we've talked a lot about previously. And it also meets those goals of sort of being something that is positive, that it is, in fact, an impact on the world. So those are the things that are happening around us, but that counterbalance seems to come from within the industry. By putting together a tech platform that facilitates trading, that professionalizes trading, does that require the industry to come up to a certain standard and the people outside of the industry to come down to a certain standard? How do you view that platform as facilitating that communication that frankly exists but needs to be much, much, much more effective for this to become what we all know it can become?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's about living up to what this plant is. You know, at the core of our trading ecosystem, we like to use the term authentication. That's authentication of the counterparties involved, the service providers involved, the authentication of the products being traded. But I think we're also starting to speak about the authentication in terms of sustainable development and impact metrics. And we're looking towards incentivizing our members towards that notion and really creating that. In terms of where we are vis-a-vis, you know, intra-market versus external market forces coming in, I think, you know, to go back to the UN, the last goal there is called participation. And I think that's where we really are at. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do a little bit in the creation of this stakeholder platform. In terms of standards, and I think, Bob, that's really the issue here. But when you put it, again, if we take a step back, when you put it into the context of where this industry is, we are still in the infancy of this industry. And now is really the time at the outset to really come together, collaborate, and start creating a narrative around these notions of standardization and harmonization, because without these things, the exponential growth of the potential exponential growth of this industry will be considerably mitigated. Will always remain a tiny niche market unless we take these steps together as an industry. So it's really stepping up. I know one of your previous podcasts where Ceci was there from GPS speaking about these things, living up to what this plant really is. And I think that has to be the narrative at the moment.
Well, it does, and especially now, considering the COVID scenario, the food supply chain has been interrupted on a major scale. This is well known. Couple that with the fact that plant-based proteins were all the rage prior to our novel coronavirus pandemic. Those things are driving the protein market through the roof. That's a bit of an overstatement, but it's making a lot of activity present. And if you look at industrial hemp and the seed perspective alone, there's a lot of protein content in there. If people that are producing plant material can get away from the notion that CBD is an industry rather than just an ingredient and look at the plant to produce and service multiple verticals, one of which is the seed vertical, the grain vertical, which then in turn produces protein, which then in turn supplies the gaps in the supply chain as a result of the COVID scenario, we are supercharged and ready to go as a plant, as an industry, but people have to come to the realization. Yet all I keep hearing is, oh, I'm going to plant CBG crops this year. I'm going to plant this. I'm going to plant that. At the end of the day, farmers need to plant what the market demands, and the market demands a crop that can service multiple verticals, not just one.
Well, Saul, I really appreciate you highlighting the Cece podcast when she came on the Hoban Minute and talking about legitimizing the cannabis industry. I mean, I think that is core to what we're talking about now. But I want to ask you another question when we think about standardization, which is blockchain, which I know is part of your platform. I think there's a lot of people out there who may not even be familiar with what blockchain is. It's such a new technology. But could you speak to what is blockchain and why is it so important in the cannabis supply chain? Why is it important to your platform and just the like?
Your last comment's definitely resonating. Definitely, and we see it from a trading perspective. Going on to the blockchain point, I think we're really going back to the way we opened up this discussion and conversation, this notion of auditable measurability. And the major way through an IT-driven platform to do that is through certain technologies that we have available to us, one of which being blockchain. The notion here, not to delve into the technological element of it, but it's an irrefutable platform through which we can do these things, such as auditability, create a chain of auditability from genetics all the way through to the consumer market. And that's really the heart of where things are going in terms of auditability. We are very, very excited about the upside potential, but I think it has to be muted or put into perspective. And I think the underlying notions of what we've been speaking about, guys, on this podcast is where the industry is today and where it could be. And I think we sort of sometimes get ahead of ourselves about where we really are today. And I think the same thing is happening with blockchain. You know, I don't know what the metrics are, but the number of press releases about implementation of blockchain in the industry is interesting. But I think if you bring it down to basics, it's the implementation of a technology that allows for the irrefutable auditability of data as products, in our case, in the trading platform, as products move from point A to point B to point C through the pipeline. Once you start capturing those data points on a blockchain, that's when you can start using those data points. And I think a lot what we'll be seeing in terms of trading is twofold. One, capturing of data, and that's what we do at Seamtrex. And the other one is the use of that data and giving predictive indicators and start using algorithms and deep learning and AI to start understanding A, what's going on in our industry, and B, where this industry is going to. So I think it's without a doubt one piece of technology that's a piece of this puzzle that we're trying to build together.
Well, Saul, I think your platform is at the cutting edge of where this industry is going. You raised that great point. Where is the industry now? Where is it going? It's evolving at such a fast rate. There's certainly going to be an impact on this industry by COVID that we aren't quite sure of just at this point. But, you know, Bob, any parting thoughts from you on this matter?
Well, no, I think that the blockchain discussion was extremely enlightening in the sense that it's a tool in a toolbox that goes towards, to your point, verification and auditability. It is not the end-all be-all. Perhaps it can be by way of technology, but it doesn't need to be if we implement it. It's a new technology. It is a new tool, just like industrial hemp is a new industry and a new plant-based material to trade and engage in international commerce. So as these things grow together and they interconnect, it'll be really, really interesting to see how your tech platform, which we're very excited about, and we're happy to get our our world, our network, our clients involved in, because it'll make business more sophisticated, more professionalized, and more reliable for them. That's what farmers demand. That's what processors demand. That's what retailers demand. And it doesn't exist right now.
Yeah, and I think, Bob, you hit the nail on the head. It was kind of our learning journey over the last 2 years was this notion of we started off really focusing on the supply side of the industry, the cultivation side of the industry, and what the drivers were there. But I think we very quickly realized that this industry is demand-driven. And when you start thinking about who are the consumers, and you know, it really is at the moment, to a great extent, driven by millennials. And when you have two products on a shelf for millennials, one that can be audited on a number of different levels, you know, both on the product side, but also on the sustainability and impact side. You know, is it a force for good? You have one product that's a force for good and one product that's not labeled or marketed in any way. It's clear where that's going to go. And that speaks to this authentication that we're involved in. And I think once we start getting our head around that this is going to be, and it is a demand-driven industry, these things are going to come to the fore. Because at the end of the day, we're in business. And once we start realizing that this force for good is a very, very powerful not only business tool and strategy, but a conduit to create profit that outperforms the market, then people are going to start really to wake up and listen to these notions.
You hit the nail on the head, Saul. And speaking as just one millennial, I will absolutely corroborate what you just said right there. You are absolutely right. We cannot wait to have you on again to share all of these wonderful insights with us on the Hoban Minute. Saul, you take care and stay safe out there.
Thanks, Saul.
Thanks so much, guys. Much appreciated. Be safe.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minute special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to Hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@Hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.